Welcome to Managing Myeloma. I am Dr. Jacob Laubach. In today's presentation, I will review the role of maintenance and consolidation therapy in multiple myeloma, specifically using a patient-centered approach. In this video, I'll provide you with background on identifying patients who may benefit from maintenance and consolidation therapy, and summarize treatment options available based on individual patient profile and treatment history. We'll also cover data from recent clinical trials related to patient outcomes. Let's begin. As is well known, myeloma outcomes have improved dramatically over the course of the past decade or so with the availability of new, better treatment options for patients, and it's anticipated that outcomes for patients will continue to improve in the coming years. This is the current paradigm for the initial treatment of multiple myeloma. Patients are evaluated for their eligibility for autologous stem cell transplantation, which remains a standard of care for newly diagnosed multiple myeloma. Those who are transplant eligible receive induction therapy with regimens incorporating two or preferably three drugs, followed in many instances by autologous stem cell transplantation, and thereafter by consolidation and maintenance therapy. Those who are transplant ineligible also receive induction therapy with regimens incorporating two or at times three drugs for a period of time before transitioning to maintenance therapy. The rationale for maintenance therapy is as follows. It allows us to preserve response in patients with a complete response or better, to deepen response in individuals who have achieved less than a complete response, to lengthen the response duration and overall survival, improve quality of life, and minimize disease and treatment-related symptoms. I'm going to present three patient cases from individuals in my own practice. The first, a 70-year-old gentleman who originally presented with fatigue and was found to be anemic with renal impairment. He was diagnosed with ISS3 IgG lambda multiple myeloma. He received five cycles of therapy with cyclophosphamide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone, and achieved a very good partial response prior to undergoing autologous stem cell transplantation. We'll discuss later what choice was made in his care regarding maintenance therapy. In another case, a 76-year-old woman presented with shoulder and sternal pain and was found to have a sternal mass and numerous lytic bone lesions. She was diagnosed with ISS2 IgA-kappa multiple myeloma with FISH analysis showing additional copies of 1q, trisomy 9, and monosomy 13, as well as deletion 17p. She received 8 cycles of lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone and achieved a very good partial response. Once again, later on our presentation, we'll discuss choices that were made with respect to maintenance therapy in her case. And finally, a 43-year-old gentleman presents with back pain and is found to have diffuse lytic bone lesions along with anemia, hypercalcemia, and renal impairment. He's diagnosed with ISS2 kappa light chain multiple myeloma and on FISH analysis found to have deletion 13q and deletion 17p. He received 6 cycles of therapy with lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone followed by autologous stem cell transplantation. With regard to maintenance therapy, there are a number of important clinical considerations to consider. First, which maintenance agent is most suitable for a particular patient based on prognostic factors, prior therapy, coexisting medical conditions, as well as patient preference? Second, what's the optimal duration of maintenance therapy? Third, it's critically important to monitor for maintenance-related toxicities and provide appropriate supportive care. And finally, what is the impact of maintenance therapy on management of the disease at the time of relapse? Fortunately, with regard to maintenance therapy in multiple myeloma, this is an area where we're guided by the results of numerous high-quality phase 3 clinical trials. The IFM 2005-02 study was an evaluation of lenalidomide maintenance in the post-transplant setting. In this study, which was conducted across 78 sites in France, Belgium, and Switzerland, 542 patients were randomized in the aftermath of either a single or tandem autologous stem cell transplantation to either lenalidomide consolidation followed by lenalidomide maintenance, or in the second arm of the trial, lenalidomide consolidation followed by placebo. The incorporation of lenalidomide maintenance as part of the patient's overall treatment strategy led to a significant improvement of progression-free survival, with a median progression-free survival of 41 months in the group of patients who received lenalidomide maintenance versus 23 months for those who received placebo. There was no difference in this trial in overall survival at 3 years. Of note, an increased incidence of second primary cancers, both hematologic cancers as well as solid tumors, was observed among patients who received lenalidomide maintenance in this study. A second trial of lenalidomide maintenance in the post-transplant setting was the CALGB 100-104 trial. In this study, which was conducted across sites in North America, 460 patients who were less than 70 years of age had received 2 cycles of induction therapy and achieved at least stable disease or better, were randomized to receive either lenalidomide maintenance starting at a 10-milligram dose or placebo. Once again, there was a significant improvement in progression-free survival associated with the use of lenalidomide maintenance, with a median progression-free survival of 46 months versus 27 months in those who received placebo. In this study, importantly, there was also an overall survival benefit at 3 years, with 88% of patients living who received lenalidomide versus 80% of patients who received placebo. Bortezomib has also been evaluated as a post-transplant maintenance option. However, there are no specific randomized phase III trials that were designed to specifically isolate the impact of bortezomib maintenance. This was an important study by the Hovind and GMMG groups in which bortezomib was incorporated in the management of patients with newly diagnosed disease from the time of induction therapy through maintenance therapy in the post-transplant setting. In this trial, transplant-eligible patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma between the ages of 18 and 65 were randomized to receive either 3 cycles of vincristine, adriamycin, and dexamethasone, a previous standard of care in the field, or 3 cycles of bortezomib, adriamycin, and dexamethasone, followed in either case by stem cell mobilization in either a single or tandem autologous transplantation. Patients who had received the VAD treatment then received maintenance therapy with thalidomide at 50 milligram daily for 2 years, or bortezomib maintenance with bortezomib administered intravenously at 1.3 milligram per meter squared every other week for 2 years. The incorporation of bortezomib as a component of maintenance therapy in this trial, as well as induction therapy, led to significant improvement in both progression-free and overall survival. It also proved to be quite feasible and safe. Importantly, there appeared to be a benefit to the incorporation of bortezomib in terms of overcoming high-risk disease characteristics as defined by both ISS stage and FISH. As you can see, the progression-free survival curves in the study in the VAD group showed significant differences according to risk groups, whereas in the group of patients treated with bortezomib, the progression-free survival curves cluster together, indicating that those with high-risk disease had better outcomes overall than in those patients who received VAD. Other clinical trials have evaluated the impact of lenalidomide maintenance in transplant-ineligible study patients. The MM015 study, for example, randomized 459 transplant-ineligible patients to receive either standard melphalan and prednisone, melphalan and prednisone and lenalidomide, or melphalan, prednisone, and lenalidomide followed by lenalidomide maintenance. Patients were treated in 9 28-day cycles followed by either placebo in the groups shown in blue and gray, or maintenance therapy in the MPR followed by lenalidomide maintenance group. These are response rates that were observed in this trial, and as you can see, the highest level of overall response rate at 77% was achieved among those patients who received melphalan and prednisone along with lenalidomide, followed by lenalidomide maintenance. Progression-free survival is shown here, which, as you can see, favors the inclusion of lenalidomide maintenance as a part of the patient's overall treatment regimen. There was no impact on overall survival with the addition of lenalidomide maintenance. The first trial was another pivotal trial evaluating the role of lenalidomide maintenance in transplant-ineligible patients. In this study, patients were randomized 1:1:1 to receive either lenalidomide plus low-dose dexamethasone continuously, lenalidomide plus low-dose dexamethasone for 18 cycles, or melphalan and prednisone plus thalidomide for a total of 12 six-week cycles. There was stratification on the basis of age, country, and ISS stage. These are the progression-free survival curves, and once again, progression-free survival was superior with the incorporation of lenalidomide maintenance as part of the overall treatment approach. There was no benefit conferred with the inclusion of lenalidomide maintenance on overall survival, however. With regard to the topic of post-transplant consolidation therapy, which has been an area of great clinical interest, important insights were gleaned from the CTN's 0702 or STAMINA trial, which was reported on at the 2016 American Society of Hematology meeting by Dr. Stadtmauer and his colleagues. In this trial, 750 patients who had undergone autologous stem cell transplantation were randomized 1:1:1 to receive single-agent lenalidomide maintenance, post-transplant consolidation therapy with lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone for 4 cycles, followed by maintenance therapy with lenalidomide, or tandem autologous stem cell transplantation, followed by lenalidomide maintenance. The primary endpoint of this study was progression-free survival, and as you can see here, there was no difference in progression-free survival across the 3 arms of the study. Moreover, there was no difference in overall survival across the 3 arms of the study. Let's return now to the patient cases that we had discussed earlier on in our presentation. The first was a 70-year-old gentleman who had presented with fatigue and ultimately diagnosed with ISS stage 3 lambda multiple myeloma. He had a very good response to induction therapy with cyclophosphamide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone, and ultimately underwent autologous stem cell transplantation. We discussed treatment options, and noting the fact that he had achieved a good response, that there was very strong data from multiple phase 3 clinical trials supporting the use of post-transplant lenalidomide therapy, we opted to pursue lenalidomide maintenance in his case, and he's now approximately 3 years removed from autologous stem cell transplantation. We've had to dose reduce lenalidomide and manage a bit of lenalidomide-associated diarrhea, but otherwise he's tolerated the drug well and continues to do well from an overall clinical standpoint. The second case, as you'll recall, is that of a 76-year-old woman who had presented with shoulder and sternal pain and found to have numerous lytic bone lesions as well as a sternal mass. She had high-risk disease by virtue of a complex karyotype that included additional copies of 1q, as well as deletion 17p. She had a very good partial response to 8 cycles of lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone. At the age of 76 years old, she was not an ideal candidate for autologous stem cell transplantation. We discussed options in her case and ultimately made the decision to proceed with 2-drug maintenance therapy utilizing both lenalidomide and bortezomib because of the high-risk nature of her disease. It's also important to emphasize that as part of her initial therapy, she tolerated both bortezomib and lenalidomide quite well, had very little peripheral neuropathy related to bortezomib, and withstood lenalidomide as well with regard to blood counts, diarrhea, and other issues, and she's continued to tolerate lenalidomide plus bortezomib maintenance well. She's now approximately 3 years into her course and has not shown evidence of disease progression at this point. Finally, we discussed the case of a 43-year-old gentleman who has high-risk multiple myeloma. He had a number of important clinical manifestations related to his myeloma, as you'll recall, and also had both deletion 17p and deletion 13q on FISH analysis. He was treated with a standard regimen of lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone and had a good response, then went to autologous stem cell transplantation and emerged from autologous stem cell transplantation with a complete response. I discussed options with him, reviewing results of important clinical trials in the field, including both the IFM as well as the CALGB trials. It was noted at that time that there was an increased risk of second primary cancers, and to this particular patient, being a younger patient, he was quite concerned about the possibility of developing another tumor. And we thus discussed alternative approaches to maintenance therapy and ultimately decided to utilize the approach that had been taken in the Hovind trial of administering bortezomib every other week as maintenance therapy. He's now approximately 3.5 years from his autologous transplantation, doing well, tolerating bortezomib with minimal side effects, if any, and remains in a good response with regard to his disease. In terms of conclusions, I would say that, as mentioned during the course of this presentation, multiple randomized clinical trials have shown a progression-free survival benefit associated with the use of lenalidomide maintenance in both transplant-eligible and transplant-ineligible patients with multiple myeloma. An overall survival benefit was observed in the CLGB 100-104 study. Lenalidomide maintenance is typically well tolerated, with decreased blood counts and diarrhea being relatively common side effects, both of which can be managed with appropriate dose reductions, at times schedule changes, and appropriate supportive care. Second primary malignancies have been associated with lenalidomide maintenance in the transplant and non-transplant setting in patients who have received melphalan. The risk of death due to second primary cancers, though, is substantially less than the risk of multiple myeloma-related death. It's my practice generally, at the time we would initiate post-transplant maintenance therapy, approximately 2 to 3 months after transplant, to discuss the relative merits of maintenance therapy with lenalidomide, including potential side effects like secondary malignancies, and together with the patient and family members make a decision about which approach to follow. As mentioned before, bortezomib is a safe and well-tolerated option as maintenance therapy for patients who, for whatever reason, prefer not to receive or cannot receive lenalidomide as maintenance therapy. And then with regard to post-transplant consolidation therapy with either a second autologous transplant or lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone prior to lenalidomide maintenance, these approaches in a large randomized phase 3 trial did not confer benefit in terms of progression-free or overall survival relative to lenalidomide maintenance therapy alone, which in my view further establishes lenalidomide maintenance as the standard of care. However, it is recognized that certain populations of individuals with multiple myeloma who are particularly high risk, those for example with complex karyotype, 17p deletion, or very aggressive clinical characteristics, may benefit from use of a 2 or even 3 drug maintenance approach. In terms of future directions, I would leave you with these final key takeaway points. Insight regarding the optimal duration of maintenance therapy will come from the ongoing IFM DFCI 2009 study, recognizing that in the IFM component of the study, patients received lenalidomide maintenance for a fixed period of time, whereas those in the American portion of the study are receiving lenalidomide maintenance until time of disease progression. It's also of note that studies of ixazomib, the first FDA-approved oral proteasome inhibitor, are ongoing. As this is an oral agent, this agent has significant potential as a monotherapy or in combination regimens for post-transplant consolidation and maintenance therapy, or in transplant-ineligible patients as maintenance therapy. Studies are also now evaluating the safety and efficacy of monoclonal antibodies, elotuzumab and daratumumab, in the maintenance setting, particularly in combination with lenalidomide. Thanks very much for viewing this activity.